U2 fan, religious studies scholar Chad Seals, illuminates the often ignored threads that run through and complicate the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's popular persona and promise. This Hall of Famer, yep, U2, Bono. Let's talk about it. U2's front man since 1978, arguably one of the most recognizable people on the planet. Here's the book, Religion Around Bono, Evangelical Enchantment and Neoliberal Capitalism. Say that three times. Chad, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sally. How are you doing?
And fine, associate professor of religious studies at the University of Texas at Austin, also authoring the secular spectacle. But here you are talking about Bono, and I understand. I trust you're a fan.
Yes, I grew up in that era. I was growing up around the '80s, and there's the Joshua Tree and Rattle and Hum, and I used to listen to Rattle and Hum in particular quite too many times. I wore out back when we had CDs. But, yeah, and I grew up in an evangelical world in which U2 was the kind of music that was to be rebellious without having to do anything necessarily, a way to sort of react to your parents' religion without necessarily leaving it, but at least feeling like you were at the moment.
I want to ask for the big picture first before I get into a little Bono 101. Basically the question is, what is your intent? Talk about the title, Religion Around Bono.
Exactly. The book is part of a series with Penn State University Press of Religion Around. And we take cultural icons, which would normally be kind of assumed to be secular figures, and we study them as religious subjects. And we're not looking at the religious biography of those subjects in particular, but the religion around, the atmosphere, the weather that surrounds the individual as really a microcosm of larger patterns in society. So some of the other books in the series include Religion and Billie Holiday, Religion Around Billie Holiday by Tracy Fezzedin. There's books on Virginia Woolf, Emily Dickinson, Shakespeare. And so this is a book, it's a more contemporary figure, but it's a book in that series that carries on this idea of taking a specific person and looking at the religious world that surrounds them.
Let's get into some basics. I understand Bono, a son of a Roman Catholic father and Anglican mother, neither of whom I understand took religion seriously, according to your research. How did the circumstances of his early beginning shape who he was to become?
That's one of the patterns in the book that is very fascinating to study, which is how Bono sees religion as getting in the way of God. And he sees his parents as being on both sides of the religious conflict in Ireland. And because of their love for each other, they thought it was kind of ridiculous that people would oppose their marriage just based on what tradition they were born into. And so from the very beginning of Bono's life, he sees in his parents this love transcending religious, organized religion. And it's love, it's spirituality that he sees as transcendent of religion in a limiting form or a limiting capacity. And that in itself is part of a larger trend of spiritual but not religious folks who are resistant to organized religion and really are seeking individual freedom and through spirituality and spiritual journey. And Bono to this day will take his family to church, but he won't go into a church that a service is being conducted. So he will wait until the service is over and then go into that church building. So it's a respect for the spiritual essence of what he sees in organized religion, but a resistance to its structures, its hierarchies, its corruption.
Tell me about Bono's performance techniques. A, is there a hint of his background in any of his engagement of his audience? And I understand perhaps that he might have tools that he employs to engage. Tell me about this.
Yeah, he comes from an evangelical revival tradition, which coming from Ireland is a small religious demographic to come from an evangelical world. But somehow Bono began being associated with one, his school he went to was an evangelical non-denominational school, which was really out of the norm at the time in Ireland. And he also became part of this group called Shalom, which was a very otherworldly group that sought to withdraw from this world, share its possessions. And at one point, being part of that group almost convinced Bono, The Edge, and Larry Mullen Jr. that they shouldn't pursue the band U2. And Paul McGinnis, the manager, famously intervened and said, no, you guys need to keep on following the ban. So later on, Bono sees his involvement in Shalom as something of a distraction. They were naive, and he really seeks to take the message of evangelicalism into the world through secular means. And this is part of a tradition going back to the Second Great Awakening in American revival history. And if you think of evangelicalism as its very basic terms as good news, and then evangelicalism is the inheritor of these revival traditions from Western Europe through the United States, and even before that, the colonies. And so the Second Great Awakening is this figure, Charles Finney, who takes this notion that revivals were the work of God and should be just up to God whenever they happen. We have no idea when they happen. And Finney developed modern revival techniques, and these modern revival techniques, for Finney, you're like a farmer. You don't just look at the fields and wait for things to grow. You have a method, a technique. You sow the field. God ultimately might bring the rain and the sun, but it's up to us as human beings to take agency and to use these techniques to convert souls. And Finney used famously this thing called the anxious bench. So if you imagine yourself at an outdoor church service in which Finney's up front preaching at you and then says, if you're contemplating your salvation, if you're not saved, come sit on this bench and we'll all pray for you. It's a form of peer pressure. If you could sit on that bench in front of a crowd and not convert, then everyone would know you haven't done it. And Bono does similar things in his concerts, not in a way to convert you to save your soul, but to convert you to his cause, which is these moral social causes in Africa. And he'll call out politicians. For example, say Bill Clinton and Beastie Boys are in the house. They'll be in a luxury box. And like the anxious bench, he calls them out in the concert and says, they're here. And that's usually when he starts to talk about his causes in Africa that he is involved with.
Yes, much more about Africa and about Bono. What's your take-home message, Chad, with religion around Bono?
The takeaway message? I'm really interested in how we as consumers have been offered this ability to buy social change through our product purchase and to think, sort of reflect on the ways in which we might have agency to do other forms of social justice work as a collective, as communities, through our work site, through our companies, through our labor. So that's one of the things that's missing or has been left out. Bono will refer to Dr. King often with the message of love, but ignore Dr. King's longstanding work in organizing labor and working on behalf of labor unions.
So again, tagline for you, evangelical enchantment and neoliberal capitalism, religion around Bono, Chad E. Seals. How do we find out more information?
The place to go look is the Penn State University Press site, psupress.org. And you could find my book around the Religion Around series, as well as several of the other books in the series.
Great. Favorite song, please, of Bono?
Oh, that's a good one.
Okay.
Probably Streets Have No Name, which is by many folks sort of the standard of the secular gospel hymn book these days.
Thank you very much, Chad. Keep on doing good work.